Hey, baseball fans, go yard with BetMGM, the sportsbook born in Vegas. Enjoy top odds on your favorite home run bets, fast and convenient ways to play same-game parlays, special boosts and tokens, and so much more. From the first pitch to the game-winning fireworks, there are more ways than ever to supercharge your excitement. Download the BetMGM app and get your piece of MLB action. BetMGM is an official partner of Major League Baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER available in the U.S. For New York, 8778-HOPE-NY. Or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. First bet offers for new customers only. All other promotions for existing customers. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Do you swear to protect the travelers of the night? And bring my vengeance to those who would do them harm.
Yes.
Then rise. Rise and live again. As my fist of vengeance. As my Moon Knight.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Kirk.
And this is Moon Knight Cast Episode 5.
This week we're covering Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 5, Asylum.
Insane.
Insane in the membrane.
No Moon Knight again. Are you okay with that?
I mean, you know, it's one of my let's see if it was a point or a note. If it was a note, I'll respond. If it was a point, then we're gonna have to
wait. Yeah,
that's right.
That's fine.
I do comment on that. I'll wait. But yeah.
We'll wait. Okay. Well, let's get into it then. It's Moon Knight Season 1, Episode 5, Asylum. What did you think in general?
In general, I thought it was great. I think I'm not surprised that there will be some people disappointed with the fact that there isn't a Moon Knight appearance,
except for like the awesome badass moment that Moon Knight is born, but that was really brief.
Yeah, super brief. I enjoyed getting deep into the weeds. Not reeds.
That too.
Yeah. That too, right? But I dug getting into that with regards to the personality disorder and the origin of that and you know, getting the backstory that really helps make the whole thing more complete. So I dug it.
Yeah. Yeah, we wanted that. We were like, are they going to have an episode explaining? We were specifically, I think, talking about the scene where Moon Knight is born and that they've talked about with the mercenaries and everything, but also just how Stephen Grant was born and all of that. So, and right. It was a really clever way to do it with this whole sort of afterlife idea and going through the memories and everything. Yeah. I thought it was trippy and really dark, like,
yeah,
very,
absolutely.
Very,
and sad
and sad. Yeah. And shocking. And the whole thing about having Moon Knight have dissociative identity disorder, like I think a lot of times in comics and shows when they'd have that, it's just a way to make it more interesting by having a character have more than one personality. But here they pay respect to this as a disorder and really try to explore the truth of what it could be like for someone, you know?
Yeah. And almost not so much that it's a disorder, but more of a defense mechanism.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, a way that the mind, when faced with unbelievable trauma, fractures and does things to try and protect itself, mm-hmm. and comfort itself and deal with it, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
and so if you're going to explore that, then you need to have an actual traumatic event that we witnessed.
Correct.
And it was dark. So, all right, let's get into our points. What do you have your first one?
So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to pick up right basically with that intro. I mean, it's really, it was a deep origin story that I thought, you know, was fantastic. I thought, so just to recap, make sure that we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. So he developed two alters, one to protect him and suffer all the abuse. That's Jake. And one to be the perfect son to help manage his mom's violence and to allow him to have kind of a normal life. And that's Steven. So that's what I took away.
I am not so sure about the Jake thing, but that's one of my points. So
okay.
I'll get into it. I think that's a possibility though. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the Dr. Harrow scenes and especially like his explanation for the organizing principle, mm-hmm. That the mind uses to deal with trauma and personality. And it would appear that the show is kind of demonstrating that organization with the choice of the different environments that the episode takes place in. So you've got one, the doctor's office, and he's dealing with either Mark or Steven or Jake. That's kind of denial and avoidance and kind of the lower level. And then the hallways filled with the doors and the memories kind of representing subconscious and his developing awareness and looking at those things that are causing his issues. It's kind of an echo of the standard psychotherapy process too, you know, and then the outside and the sand being the third kind of environment, which would, you know, represent acceptance and self-actualization.
Interesting.
And I thought that was kind of an original, cool way to do this. You know, mm-hmm. we were kind of inside Mark's mind, you know, and I thought that was really cool. I love that they had to dig into their shared memories and be honest with each other in order to balance their hearts. You know, mm-hmm. The big question though is if Steven's accepting of being the altar and understanding his origin allows him to then sacrifice himself in the end to save Mark. Mm-hmm. And that in turn brings the scales into balance.
Mm-hmm.
What about Jake? I think is a question. How can the scales balance? It,
maybe
which they do
no
at
Jake.
The very end.
That's my answer.
Okay. If all three personalities are not in harmony.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I have a theory and let's hear yours and then I'll tell you mine.
Okay. One thing though, that you just said brought up something in me, like, yeah, it was about Mark and Steven had to open up to each other and share
Correct.
Their memories
Correct.
With each other in order to balance the scales. Right.
Steven thought he was the real, he
I
was
know.
The original. Right,
and that's what I liked about when Mark said that I forget exactly what he said, but basically that I made you up to, and then Steven punched him in the face.
Right.
And because
right.
that's like, I'm a real person. Fuck you. You know, that's
right,
kind of
right.
how he felt. But it's interesting because like I was just saying, and you said too, that to balance the scales, they needed to share their experiences and memories with each other, because how dissociative identity disorder can develop is specifically not to do that, you know?
Correct.
Steven's
Correct.
There in order to not have to deal with the
Correct.
Trauma.
Correct.
And so maybe that's why, like, I was trying to figure out why would the scales be balanced? And maybe it's because when the scales balanced is when Steven froze and died in the sand.
Right.
And so just let's take Jake off the table for a second and just talk about it in terms of these two. Maybe okay. that means that, okay, Mark has sort of faced up to all these things that he was trying to avoid, and Steven being gone symbolizes that. Is that what you thought? I was a bit confused.
Well,
about it.
I saw it more as Steven coming to terms and accept that. Well, Mark's alter Steven comes to terms with the fact that he is an alter and that what his purpose was and how he came to be and what the truth is. And therefore, he realizes that he's just an aspect of Mark. Mm-hmm. And so essentially by, you know, sacrificing himself, he's saving Mark, which is saving him. You know what I mean? In other words, well, I'll talk about it more when I go over mine, but that's how I'm seeing it.
Okay. Well, we'll keep attacking this at different angles. So, this whole third personality thing, it's my turn, right? So I'll go on to my point. Third personality. I've been waiting for either Jake Lockley, we both have, everyone has, or some other third personality. They've definitely been hinting at it. It's weird. I figured by this time that it would be overt, you know, and maybe you could argue that it is. One thing that happened in this episode that I thought was a sign of it at first is when they're walking through the asylum, they're looking through the windows at different memories. Steven sees, you know, himself or Oscar Isaac standing on a city street corner. And he says, "Do you remember this?" And Mark's like, "I don't know. It's a street. How many streets have you walked down in your whole life?" And since standing,
but it's not just that he's like, "Oh, I don't care." He's purposefully saying he does. It's clear he's making him uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's making him uncomfortable.
He doesn't want to talk about that. He doesn't want to share what that is with Steven.
Well, at first I thought it kind of makes sense. Like if I saw myself on a street corner, I don't know if I'd remember the exact time either, but,
what that street corner is later.
First I thought it was, okay, this is Jake. That's why neither one of them remember it. There's a cat in the background, but it's a scene that we see later where Mark is standing. I think it's Mark outside his dad's home while his mother's funeral's going on. He's got that flask that he's drinking from and he's in the same coat and everything. So I think maybe it was Jake, but it also could just be that Mark waved this off because he never wants to expose Steven to anything that has to do with his mother, her death or anything. Cause that's why Steven's there, to not have to deal with that stuff, you know? So it could be that too. Then another thing is we see Mark with Dr. Harrow, and Mark has a bloody bandage on his nose.
Not Mark. Which,
or maybe Jake. And that's when, you know, in the previous episode when he hit himself, you thought maybe that was Jake coming through, so that connects that.
Yep.
And then he starts talking in kind of a New York accent. I'm going to play a little bit of that here.
That's
here
key.
Hey, thank you. I feel really great. I mean, they must pay you a lot of money in this place. You know, you're really good. I tell you what, I feel like $1 million. Never felt so good. I'm going to see myself out. Thank you. Doctor,
it's awesome, man. You know what remind me of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Which part? I love that movie, but
yeah, when Nicholson he's just that kind of portrayal. Yeah, he just really like,
it's
good.
All great. Yeah. KK, I'm out of here.
I'm out of here.
That's such a great movie. Wait, where am I in my notes here? So I think, okay, maybe that's Jake. But then in the next, maybe it's just Mark when he's excitable. Maybe not. But right after this, they flash over back to where it's Mark and Steven.
I mean, you just said yourself that you thought it was a different accent.
Yeah, but listen to this. So then the very next scene, they're with Tara, because you know how they keep flashing back and forth between Harrow and then Tara. So it's Mark and Steven with Tara, and he says, "This is Mark, right? That's Mark."
Yeah,
Mark
I think Steven. So.
Then he says this.
Oh man! Wow, these minutes are really amazing.
So it sounds all similar, kind of like maybe when he's just excitable. I don't know. I'm that's a bit of a stretch, but I'm not totally convinced that we've seen Jake. Now, the thing that makes me think, okay, if there is no third personality, then why the hell would they show this other sarcophagus with somebody pounding inside?
I think the other thing too is that at that level in the organizing principle theory, mm-hmm. where he's with Steven's outside is in together with him. So at that level of awareness in his psyche, the altar would have a substantial would be there. You know what I'm saying? It's not like he's switching in that level of his consciousness. He's not switching back and mm-hmm. forth. So he wouldn't switch over to Mark in that level mm-hmm. when they're in the hallways.
He would just appear as a third.
He would just appear as a third, which he did in that level, but he's inside the sarcophagus.
Inside the sarcophagus. Right. Yeah.
And that's my logic.
I'm just saying, like, I would have thought that this would have been over by now. And but there's things on both sides for me. The sarcophagus is the big thing that makes me think, okay, there's got to be. And also in the flashback, which we'll talk more about, when he becomes Moon Knight, it wasn't clear whether Mark killed everyone Bushman, or we think maybe it was Jake, you know.
Right.
But they did it so vaguely that it's just they saw a lot of dead bodies around in vague language about what exactly happened. It's kind of, I'm getting kind of frustrated. Like, come on, we got one more episode. Let's have
it. Hang in there.
And then, so the other thing that makes me doubt the third personality is the whole weighing of the souls thing, because I thought at the beginning of this episode when she said, oh, these are incomplete, I'm like, all right, yeah, that's because we don't have the third personality yet. And then it was resolved without the introduction of the third personality. What the hell?
So, well, listen, maybe my theory will answer some of your concerns. Mm-hmm. Okay. My theory is, because I agree that the fact that there was two hearts that had to be balanced made no sense if he's got three personalities. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they resolve each other and then the scales balance again reinforces, well, what the heck? What about the third personality? What about, I don't understand. How can that be the case? But the difference perhaps is that Mark and Steven were not simpatico. They weren't in sync with each other. Steven had no idea that he was an alter or that, he had been created. He thought he was the host. He thought, you know what I mean? So they were not truthful with each other and they didn't understand. They both didn't have a full understanding of their history and their past. And Steven had to be brought up to speed. He had to come to terms with the reality of the fact that he was an aspect of Mark's personality and not the host. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, and that was what needed to be balanced.
Okay.
So if they balanced with that recognition in the end, then the other personality must therefore already be in balance with Mark.
Okay.
So my theory is that Mark and Jake already have an understanding and an acceptance of their roles as main and sub personalities. In other words, you can't think of the alters as independent people. They're aspects of Mark. So to balance the scales, you know, Mark needs or needed Jake. And so they've probably already established, and he keeps them locked away and he just lets them out when he needs them. And that's fine for Jake because Jake just wants to go fucking crazy when he gets out and they've kind of come to terms with it already. So there's balance there. The thing that was out of balance was Steven, because there was denial all over the place with them. So that's my theory as to why, and why also Mark doesn't, you know, doesn't choose to get the sarcophagus open or anything. He wants to keep Jake where he's got him. He's got Jake situated, you know what I mean? And Jake comes when he needs him, and that's all that's their understanding and their peace with that.
So you think they're going to, in some way or another, explain all this in the final episode?
You know, I'm going to jump to one of my notes. Not only that, but I've been reading that supposedly this final episode is the shortest of all of six episodes.
It's the shortest of all the Marvel live action finale series.
It's also the shortest within the series.
I think it's like 47 minutes or something. Yeah.
So it's just crazy.
I know. I think what you're saying is interesting, but it just seems like if that was the case, then it should have happened in this episode where it was the subject of the episode. And if that is what you're saying is true, I'm curious, well, how the hell are they going to fit that into the final episode where they all also have to deal with Emmett and everything, you know?
Yeah.
But I do think that they've had some totally clear indications that there's a third personality. That sarcophagus was the biggest one. So it's got to, yeah, maybe it's got to be.
Well, it's also the lack of awareness when he commits all these, you know, slaughters. Mm-hmm. You know, like, why
but
did you do that?
We had this cafe with all these, it was such a creepy scene with all these, like, zombies of the people that Mark has killed. And he says they're all murderers and pedophiles or whatever that Khonshu wanted dead for vengeance. And he seemed to take responsibility for killing them himself. And he also, I really think it's interesting that, I mean, we'll get into it more, but he sees himself as a killer. I've always been a killer, because he's really taken on what his mother put on him, that he killed his own brother.
Right.
So that also fits in with him having done all that stuff and not some other personality, you know?
Possibly. Possibly.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe, maybe not.
I also just, since it kind of pertains to this idea of, mm-hmm. of the, you know, the, what happened with Steve, and then we'll talk about it more, the ending there. But, you know, he's not dead, even though he's frozen in stone. And again, I think that's because you can't kill an aspect of your personality. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can only kill the soul or the person. And then, you know what I mean?
So he can come back.
So if he comes back to life, then so will Steven. That's my thinking.
I hope so, because he's great.
Yeah.
And we don't want to lose him. I don't. I think the fans feel the same way, you know?
Oh, absolutely. It's a balance. Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's partly credit to the writing and credit to the acting.
Yeah.
That, you know, we've so quickly come to think of this character as these different people.
Yeah.
Instead of one person. You know, what makes him whole is both of these guys.
Right.
I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's, from what I've seen on YouTube, when I see people with dissociative identity disorder speaking from their different alters, they seem different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Okay. Was that a point of yours, or do you have one you want to go on now?
Well, I can go on.
Go ahead,
You know, the opening sequence, we kind of hit on it, so I'll just go there. The opening sequence with Dr. Harrow, I think was Jake. Okay. I think he looks different. He has the busted nose, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
If you listen, he's clearly speaking a different and has a rougher accent. We also see that scene, coming back to your comment about the scene through the window of the outside of the funeral. When we get to that scene, and when Steven and he actually go there, Mark is drinking. He's drinking from a flask by the car.
Oh, another thing about whenever he's drinking, he's Jake.
Yeah, exactly. So that's how I saw that.
Okay.
But then switches to Mark or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, our boy Ryan Neary over on Screen Crush, he does this great analysis of the possibility that, like, that Jake has actually been in every episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just amazing if that's what it ends up being, because here we are complaining every episode about the fact that this third personality is not there, and yet he's been there every freaking episode.
I could totally see that. I've said I'm not sure, I wouldn't be surprised. It would be cool.
Yeah. So let's see. I already talked about that already. So that was kind of all. I just really dug that.
Okay.
That idea that he's actually been here, popping up at different points. I mean, Ryan Neary goes on to talk about the fact that even, like, the chase scene in the first episode in the cupcake truck, you know, he kind of theorized that Jake popped instead of it. You know, it looked like it popped back to Mark, but probably it was Jake. You know what I mean? So just some cool thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if Mark feels like he's a killer and he's sort of taking responsibility for all this stuff, it still could be that Jake is just the killer aspect of Mark.
Right.
That comes out when dirty
work
needs to be done.
Right. And I think it's leading that way because of this whole thing with Layla's father and the original sin, you know, kind of idea.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay. My turn. So, I wanted to go over, this is kind of a long one, but just sort of lay out what's happening as far as the afterlife and the weighing of the souls and all that. Last episode, they came face to face with Taweret, the Egyptian goddess of childbirth, women,
right,
fertility, hippo head woman, who I thought was great, by the way, really fun.
I love that the voice is just so like not what you would think.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, you're waiting for this like blah blah blah, right, you know, and instead it's like, hey, hi,
hey,
what's
up? Okay. I mean, is it weird she has an English accent? Why is that? Maybe people who
I think it's part Egypt of what he have- was. No, I think it was part of what he was, the hippo he tells them is that, you know, it everything here appears different to people based on their own
right
experience, their own life, their own
but
world.
But she does have a hippo head.
Yeah, she does.
But I liked her personality, and I liked the way her ears flutter like.
Yeah, promises. I love that. I love that. So I love that. That was
as great. An artist, do you think you pay attention to visual stuff like that more than a lot of people?
I don't know. Maybe. I think
it's hard to know what other people do.
Yeah.
But anyway, I personally think that everything she's saying is true, though it's not for sure. But let's take for granted that it's true and explore it. So she tells them that they're dead, that they're in the realm of the Duat, the Egyptian underworld, which I guess he went there because he has this connection with Khonshu. Taweret's guiding them through their journey to the afterlife, not the afterlife. You'd be surprised how many intersectional planes of untethered consciousness exist, she says, because I think because this is the MCU and you have to take into account the Norse myths and Mephisto and hell and everything else.
She specifically mentions the spirit realm, which
is ancestral plane,
which is what is in the Black Panther movie.
Right.
And I thought that was fantastic because that cements this to the MCU as canon and kind of really takes care of that. Well, this is all just happening in his head. No, this is the real world of the MCU.
Yeah. Or it's happening in his head, but they still reference the MCU anyway.
Yeah. Well,
but like I said, I think everything she's saying is true.
Yeah.
And so they're on this ship because in Egyptian mythology, there was a funerary boat that would transport the dead to along the Nile to be judged. And we saw that little miniature in his fish tank of the ship early on.
Right. Yep.
Lots of foreshadowing in this
series. Well, the whole series. Yeah. I think so.
And then I like when they went out through the door to see that they're on the ship sailing across the sand in the Egyptian underworld. Yep, that was fantastic.
Yep. The sky was just beautiful.
Yeah. Dark and
blue and yellow and
right.
Yeah.
And the way it was swaying and everything.
Yeah.
And then the hallway started to sway like they're on a ship inside the asylum. Yeah. And then, Taweret says, she shows him these scales and says, if your heart's balanced in life, then you'll spend eternity in paradise in the field of reeds. And Stephen says she's weighing our hearts on the scales of justice and the feather of truth. You see, the ancient Egyptians believed that the heart was a sign of who you really were in life. If the scales balance by the time you end the journey, then a soul is permitted to pass into the field of reeds. So I wasn't actually sure what the weighing is supposed to represent here. In the Egyptian myths, if the heart is heavier than the feather, then it's consumed by Ammit and you don't get to go to paradise.
Correct.
And if it's lighter or balanced, you do. One article I read said the ancient Egyptians believed that the heart recorded all the good and bad deeds of a person's life and was needed for judgment in the afterlife. After a person died, the heart was weighed against the feather. If they'd led a decent life, the heart balanced with the feather and the person was rendered worthy to live forever in paradise. So do you think it's the same thing here?
Yeah, I think my interpretation is that, remember, Ammit is being punished. Ammit is locked away. Yeah. Ammit can't do her job.
She can't eat the souls of the unworthy.
Right. So someone had, they still, the process still has to go on. So obviously Taweret is continuing the process and has become in charge of that. And she in fact says 1.0, Osiris is not going to be happy about this when they try to get her to communicate with Layla or whatever, and turn the ship around or whatever. And, there's even in the gods realm, I guess there's bureaucracy.
Yeah.
and the system keeps going and different people fill the cogs, or different beings fill the cogs. So that's how I interpret that she's taking that over now, and she's doing it the way it's supposed to be done, you know, at the time of death and in this process. And then of course, when the souls start flying down from the sky, clearly you know,
things are out of whack.
Things are out of whack again. Yeah.
So, but if the weighing of the heart is to tell whether they're decent enough to get to go to paradise, basically, and but she can't weigh it because it's unbalanced. That doesn't mean that he's unworthy. It just means there's something that needs to be worked out first. And it's similar to when Harrow grabbed Stephen's hands in episode one and tried to weigh even the same like scale on his arm and said, there's chaos in you. So it's like you have to deal with your own personal stuff before you can.
Well, she also says that if you don't get back, if you're not balanced by the time we reach, you know, the end of the journey or whatever, then you go down, you know, you go down in the sands.
Yeah. The dead will take you down and you'll freeze. And
yeah. So you know, that it's either you know, it weighs against you or it doesn't balance. And then either way, that's a rejection.
Right. And I guess, you know, so then she sent that back in and said, this boat contains all the life memories and you need to, what did she say? Something about truth, like share the truth.
Yeah, man, be honest with
your
each
lives
other.
With each other. Yeah. And, then it's interesting because when, Stephen was frozen and the scales are balanced and the heart was able to be weighed, he was allowed to pass on to the reed, the field of reed. So I guess that means that he was judged to have been a decent person.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
I guess. But yeah.
I mean, with all the death and stuff he's brought in, I guess the other thing too is we don't know what qualifies as good person.
Right. I mean, he said they're all murderers and, you know, bad people. So maybe that's okay.
Correct. Correct.
In this world.
And maybe that was the point of that whole sequence.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was, well, then, you know, so like you said, they see all these souls coming down and Tauret says fear spreading in the upper world. Unbalanced souls are being judged or condemned to the sands before their time. Right. So then you think that was interesting because you're like, oh, I guess Harrow succeeded in freeing Emmett and now they're doing exactly what they were trying to stop them from doing the whole series.
Right.
And Tauret's open to sending them back up, but their body's dead. So they have to have Layla Freekonchu to heal it.
Right.
And they get to the gates of Osiris, but the scales are still not balanced. And then the dead start coming over the sides of the ship to carry them down, and those are all people that Mark killed, because he starts saying the names of cities again.
Right.
Like, I remember I killed you here and you here. And then Stephen sort of integrates his personality a little bit. He's like, well, if you've got this, then that means I've got this too. So then he goes crazy on him with the cricket bat and everything. And then anyway, I'm getting too much into the details here, but Stephen, as we mentioned, goes overboard, freezes, then the scales are able to be balanced. But then Mark goes into the field of reeds, and I'm like, wait, I thought he was supposed to be resurrected to save the world. So what happened to that? You know what I mean? They were going to go to the gate of Osiris, who, by the way, is the god of resurrection, so that he could be sent back to help with Amit and Harrow, I think. I think something didn't go totally.
I'm not following it.
So, I mean, the plan when Tauret saw that all these souls were being taken before their time,
she
agreed, if you can balance the scales, then Osiris isn't going to like this, but they'll basically, you know, she would send them back. But then she said that wouldn't do any good because your body's been shot with bullet holes. And then they said, well, let's get Layla to free Khonshu so that Khonshu can heal the body. So the plan was to free Khonshu, have the body healed, send Mark back to save the day. But then what happens instead is Mark is in this field of reeds, which is the afterlife, you know, that's what we've been told. He didn't go back to Earth.
Well, yeah, but maybe he's made it there because of the sacrifice that Stephen made and the balancing of their souls. So he went there, and that's where he's waiting now. And she's trying to get to Layla to have Layla.
It's like a waiting room.
Right. That's right. It's like the plan is not all happening all at once.
Got it.
And you know what I mean?
Yeah. That makes sense.
That's kind of how I take that. I also think I wanted to just go back a second. Mm-hmm. the when the souls come flying down and she realizes things are not happening, there's now that we know how the process works in the afterlife with the weighing of the souls, what Haro's been doing on the, in other words, it's at the end of your journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Whereas Haro is going in and making up this story about how, right. Not only it's premature. And he's saying that that's because Emmett can read through that staff what you're going to do in the future.
Right.
And that's not how the process
like
works.
Might do. But
right.
Yeah.
So there's a bastardization of the whole process. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Which is again, probably why Emmett was locked away, you know?
Right. And I think too, just thinking about it right now, Amit's job is to eat the souls.
I think you're right.
Amit's job is to eat the souls of those who've been judged unworthy. So of course it's going to be in her best interest to get more souls.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But so it's not her job to judge them.
No. But she's taking on that role because she's greedy.
Greedy. She's hungry. She's
yeah,
hungry.
She's
that's
hungry.
All.
Yeah,
she's
that's
hungry.
All.
Come on.
You gotta eat.
You gotta eat. Come on. Let's go, man. Even in the afterlife, you gotta eat, baby.
I guess so.
I'm on some pizza. Okay. So here's another
pizzas.
Yeah, no reads for me. Just pizzas.
Boring. Do you think
the field
of reeds connects with Reed Richards?
did you hear about Watts, the director?
No.
Yeah, I guess Mark Watts. Is it Mark Watts? I think it's Mark
I
Watts.
Think
he directed
right.
the Spider-Man movies.
Yes.
And he was announced to be the director of the Fantastic Four. He's stepped down yesterday.
What the
He's
fuck?
Not going to do it. He wants a break from doing superhero movies.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So who knows?
That's a bummer.
It was a bit of a bummer. Yeah, I thought he'd do a good job, but I'm sure they'll pick somebody great.
Hopefully.
Yeah. And okay. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about was there's a bit of implied sense. Maybe it's obvious in some people's minds that Khonshu was actually the one who killed his brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the logic is that they went to hang out in this cave and the rain comes and therefore the cave fills up and that's how he drowns. And that when they're walking, you'll notice the sky is completely clear. And then all of a sudden, and they react kind of like, that's weird. Why is it raining? And then he's like, oh, we were not supposed to go in when it rains and stuff like that. So remember, Haro explains to Steven in episode 2 that when the wind is blowing and everything else, he's like, you know, relax. You know, Khonshu can only, that's all he can do in this environment, in this world. You know, his effect on this world is very limited.
They made a point of that, huh? Yeah.
Right. They made a point of that. So, and then of course the most hit you in the face with it is they step on the skeleton of the bird,
mm-hmm.
which looks like his head.
Looks just like him.
Yeah. So, I think the implication is that, you know, which I think could be really, really cool. Because one, maybe Khonshu has been grooming Mark and helping create the situation where this personality disorder would come out mm-hmm. so that he could grow up and become his avatar and that he'd be easier to manipulate and use, you know? So that's kind of a heavy duty thing for, you know, a villain, you know, this long life trajectory. I think if this is all true, then in the story, I think Mark will figure it out. And that's going to be awesome too, because then it's going to have Mark already doesn't like Khonshu because of what he makes him do and everything else. But at the same time, at least it gives him these powers and he's killing bad people and everything else. He can, you know, protect people. But if he finds out that Khonshu actually killed his brother,
right.
He's going to be freaking pissed, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Which is going to set up, it's going to set up this whole dynamic between the two of them of like, you know, you're being controlled by this sociopath, even though you're doing good stuff and a sociopath that ruined your life. It's going to be weird.
I kind of feel like if that is true, that Khonshu created the rain that killed his brother, they might just keep it as a thing in the background.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it will be overt, but I think it could be true either way. It could be true or not. But one thing that this episode really did for me was kind of make it more clear why Mark was the perfect one for Khonshu to take on. Because before it was just like, oh yeah, he has a fractured personality, so he's more easily manipulatable or whatever. But now I see that, okay, he feels like a killer because his brother died and he feels like it was his fault. So now he sees himself as guilty and a killer and a bad person that's, you know, deserves to be treated badly, you know?
Correct.
And Khonshu and his mother was so, aggressive or hostile towards him, not only negligent, but hostile. So he, and his father didn't protect him enough. You know, he was mad at his father. You should have handled this when he was a teenager.
Right.
So then when you have that combination, a guy who feels like a killer and who has had no love from any authority figures, and Khonshu comes in and saves his life, then he feels bound to him. And even though Khonshu's abusive and taking advantage of him, which Steven tries to tell him, he's like, yeah, but he saved my life. So if you've been abused like that, then you'll take behavior that's slightly less than the worst and think of it as, oh yeah, I, you know, you feel bound to this person and you'll accept bad behavior. So Khonshu has this guy who accepts bad behavior from him. He's a killer. He's the perfect, you know, avatar.
Yeah. Yeah. But he obviously has always been suspicious, because the fact that Steven sees it means that Mark sees it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That he's being manipulated. Yeah.
Right.
I was a little confused on the resurrection sequence. I'm going to tie this in since we're talking about Khonshu.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark was shot, but shot in the side. He puts the gun to his head, but he doesn't pull the trigger. When he described to Layla what happened, he pointed the finger gun to his head. He also talks to Khonshu and is given the power before he fully dies.
Yeah.
So it seems like maybe rather than actually resurrecting him, Khonshu just prevents him from dying by giving him the healing suit. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why they made such a point of it in episode 4 of it, have my healing powers. You know, that was never really an aspect of, I don't believe, of Moon Knight in the comics, you know, that the suit was some sort of healing factor. You know what I mean?
I don't think so.
But it seems like they're going with that. And I wonder if that's because it makes it a little less controversial from a spiritual basis. In other words, he's not a Jesus figure being resurrected.
I read a summary in the and I wish I knew for sure if we had Scott with us. Scott, if you're hearing this, write in and let us know. But I think that might have been closer to actually what happened in the comic too, that he didn't die, but he was almost dead. I could be wrong about that. But either way, I mean, he does die in this episode, I believe. And he's probably going to be resurrected. So they are doing that.
Yeah. Maybe they're doing that on purpose so that unlike the comic, the resurrection isn't with regards to the original meeting with Khonshu. Uh-huh. The resurrection is when he comes to peace with his dual personalities.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's very cool. Yeah. I hope that's the case.
He should start a cult. I'd follow him. No, I'm just kidding.
Just what we need, another cult.
I know. So many. All right. I think it's your turn.
I saw an article that pointed out that we've had 5 episodes and Moon Knight has only been on screen like 2.5 minutes.
Oh my God.
So, but as I thought about this, it occurred to me that doesn't bother me. We kind of touched on this a little bit before, but, you know, I think Marvel has created this such a fantastic catalog now of superhero movies that we've had tons of action and fight based films. And I think the audience, as I know, as a comic book reader, and you're a comic book reader, and especially as I've gotten older, you know, I want diversity to my comics. I want some that are psychological, some that are murder mysteries, some that are relationship based, some that are more horrific, exactly. And they've really set the bar now with Marvel superhero movies, and you know, we just. I think the Disney Plus shows with their 6 to 8 episode format is allowing them to kind of step away from the traditional kind of man, woman in tights, punching shit, to say, okay, now we can dig in and get into some of these more deeper, more diverse stories. And I love it. I mean, Loki, I think, is a perfect example. WandaVision, obviously another perfect example. Not your traditional, you know, superhero in tights fighting each other movie. Mm-hmm. And I think this is on the same, you know, kind of level as that. And I'm enjoying that. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, we're going to turn around in a week or so. We get Doctor Strange, you know, Multiverse of Madness, you know what I mean? And then in the summer, in July, we get Thor. So we're going to have plenty of ass kicking superheroes with weapons and battles and monsters and everything else. So it's nice to have this, in my opinion. So I have no problem, as I mentioned before in the beginning, about the fact that there's been so little Moon Knight. Plus, this is a setup. This is an establishment of a main character that's going to be in the Marvel Universe, whether it'll be in another show or whether he's going to come into the movies, which I think he will. I mean, I can't imagine they, you know, use Oscar Isaac without, you know, going to the movies. But that was just a point I thought I wanted to make, because there's been a lot of talk out there from people. And like I said, I'm seeing articles, you know, people complaining.
No, man, I couldn't agree with you more. I exactly agree with everything you just said. I mean, that's why Legion's is my favorite superhero based show, and it's less superheroic by far than this. Right. It's more of a psychological study of a person, you know.
Yeah,
and I freaking love it. And yeah, I like different kinds of storytelling. I don't want them all to be cookie cutter the same. Like WandaVision was cool because it was just so unique. Loki, they had to do a boring one, so that's fine.
Boom. So, no, I'm just kidding. Still think it's my favorite. I still think it's my favorite of the shows.
Lots of people love it. I absolutely agree for sure. And also with Moon Knight, he's the kind of hero or anti-hero that if they show less of him than when they do, it has more of an impact, I feel like.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, if you just see Moon Knight in his costume, and this is how he was kind of, when he was originally created, he was kind of like the Batman for Marvel, you know what I mean? So he's just this guy in this cool suit who goes out and kicks, you know, criminals' ass on the streets at night.
Throws his moon-shaped boomerangs.
Exactly. He got his cool weapons and everything else. But, you know, here now we're realizing through the great work of this episode of this series, this is a much richer, much deeper, you know, character, and that what makes Moon Knight crucial, what makes Moon Knight different, unique, and cool is the fact that he is, you know, this interesting, multifaceted character with all these different personalities, and how different that is than any other hero that we have in the MCU.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Very cool. But they better show him next week.
Oh, that's it. That's it. The worst series
ever. I'm
not
ever. Watching
that
anymore doesn't happen. If they don't show
that's
him next
right.
Week.
They better open that motherfucking sarcophagus.
I know. Come on.
Sarcophagus.
God, don't introduce the sarcophagus and not fulfill it.
Yeah.
Jeez. I mean, I if they don't, then I'll just assume, okay, I guess they're going to save that for something else. But I really do want to see some Moon Knight action, even though I agree with everything you said. For the finale, we got to see some Moon Knight action.
Yep.
Okay. I thought I would go over Mark's childhood and development of dissociative identity disorder. You were right. You've been saying that he's had it since he was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know that for sure until now, but.
True.
You were right.
Well, yeah, true.
And one reason why I resisted that is it seemed to me that Steven had only recently started to have to deal with it. And we find out that their worlds started to cross.
Correct.
Bleed into each other when the mother died, you know.
Right.
But I think that means more like, okay, they could talk to each other in the mirror. But still, even in this flashback, we see that he gets on the phone with his mom, who he thinks is his mom anyway, leaving a message. Right. I did it again. I got lost. What an absolute Muppet.
Yeah.
So you'd think at some point.
No, I mean, it makes total sense. I mean, I think that as long as the mother was alive, there's this, you know, the continuation of the denial and or the hope that there'll be resolution or absolution or whatever. And once that source of all your pain and suffering is gone certainly there's probably some relief, but then there's the realization that there'll never be any reconciliation.
Resolution.
Exactly. And so your only hope is to reconcile with yourself.
Okay.
All right.
To go into psychology.
That's right. I'm gonna start my own cult.
call up Kirk if you need some help. So Mark and his brother Randall are eating in the backyard cookout with mom and dad. Probably the last good memory of his mother. He wants to go play in a cave. He says, later's gators. And mom says, you know, after a while, crocodile, which we heard him say on the phone in episode one when he thought he was right. talking to her, later's gators. Right. Isn't
Ahmet also a gator head? Or,
yeah, or alligator
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that meant maybe subconsciously Mark equates his mother with Emmett. Because Emmett judges unfairly.
Oh, you know? My God. That's brilliant. Oh, yeah. No, maybe, I maybe. Agree. No, that's great.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that, too.
So then they're acting out the Tomb Buster movies in English accents.
Right, right.
Can you hear that, Dr. Grant? And they had mentioned, by the way, I think last week, I think Harrow said Tomb Buster was so bad that not a lot of people have seen it. I think they put that line in so that it right. would make sense.
He said,
sense.
But I love the, he said, I really like the villain though.
But I think they put that line in so it makes sense that you would take on the name of the hero and it wouldn't raise any red flags. Like if he'd called his other personality Indiana Jones, then might be a little weird, you know?
Right, right, right.
So anyway, it starts raining and Randall says, Mom said not to when it's raining, and he goes, it'll be fine, don't be a baby. And then they go to the cave and there's water pouring in, and I felt like Mom should really been chasing after them at this point, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's kind of her fault. Then they're screaming, Steven's watching, adult Steven, and you hear Mommy help us, and Roro, which is the brother's nickname, really, really sad. And then you know, you presume they're drowned. And then the mother becomes cold towards Mark and blames him and shows him contempt and neglect. And at the funeral says, this is all your fault, which is also the way the episode opened. And then right. accuses him of doing it intentionally out of jealousy, which, man, I could not have any more contempt for this mother in this. It's
well, you know what though? I think you make an interesting, you just made an interesting point, which was that the guilt that she was experiencing having let this happen, it broke her. And so she took it out on him. It was easier for her to do that than to admit her own, you know, mistakes in this situation.
Yeah.
And I mean, take responsibility.
I get it. And I think that with just about anyone who's ever done anything bad, no matter how extreme, you could dig into their psyche and figure out their motivations. But at some point you got to take responsibility. And when I see any time a parent treating a child like this, I think, man, you should have went to a shrink or something, you know, and figured out how to raise your child that's left. Right. And then later Mark's hiding in his room and Mom's pounding at the door and Mark, open this door. And he's like, it's not my mom. And that's the moment where he created Steve, and his eyes rolled back into his head. Mm-hmm. Bloody hell. Look at the state of this place. Better sort it out before Mom sees it. Then she comes in and starts whipping him with the belt. You disgust me, she says.
I'm going to jump in there because at that point, there's some, also people are saying, well, if Steven
experienced
right, then how come he doesn't know? And we were talking about that here in our house about it. And there was some confusion in that. And then I saw a woman on TikTok who did a review of the episode, and she had an interesting point. And that is that if you watch really closely in that sequence, he turns to Steven, he starts putting the pencils together and cleaning up and trying to, you know, manage the situations to try and lower the hostility. But as soon as she grabs the belt, they do a quick look back at Steven as he's putting the pencils in, and he tilts his head up a little bit and his eyes flutter.
Okay.
His eyes like blink. And the implication is subtle, maybe, you know, reading into it, but I think is that at that moment when it became clear the belt was coming, Jake's what takes over.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, and that
makes
comes back
sense.
To like when he's facing going down into that tomb And he's like, you know, in his mind, Steven's like, there's no fucking way I'm going down there. There's no fucking way I'm going down on that thing. I'll never. And Jake's like, time to take over. Boom. Smacks him in the face, takes over, and then throws himself down the hole. Because he comes flying down that hole as if he wasn't even on the rope. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that, but okay.
That's how I see it.
but it does make sense that he would shift back to Mark or maybe Jake before.
Yeah, because he had to not know.
Yeah, Steven is all about being able to
correct
avoid and deny all that. So if you're getting hit with a belt, you can't deny that.
Right. Well, and Mark says to him, you're not supposed to see this because you're supposed to have a normal life.
Right. That's the whole point.
That was the whole point of him was to have on, you know, so that he would have a normal life.
I read that, you know, dissociative identity disorder is a chronic post-traumatic disorder where developmentally stressful events in childhood, including abuse, emotional neglect, disturbed attachment, and boundary violations are central factors. They most often form in children with long-term exposure to physical, sexual, or emotional abuse.
Yeah.
We can tell they really wanted to research this and present a story that went along with how it can happen in real life.
Yeah. I thought also, you brought it up earlier, but I had a note about it, so I want to bring it up again, was that I liked that, you know, the father, the way that the father was dealt with as well. And that is that, you know, twofold. One is that, you know, I think people who can't have absolutely no support system to help them mature and grow, probably become more like his mother. And that when faced with this situation, she could not fix herself. She could not see what she was doing was wrong or have, you know what I mean?
And she had model for a supportive, nurturing caretaker either.
So he had the horror of what his mom was doing to him, but he did have one parent who was trying to give him a normal experience, hence the birthdays and show him love and support and everything else. But at the same time, the father's contributing because he's not doing anything about it. He didn't step in. He didn't stop her. Yeah. And I'm glad that they made that point because it did take two in that scenario. You know what I mean? His father failed him in part, but he also gave him enough that he could go through what he's going through now. I mean, this is Mark's mind trying to solve his pain and suffering and sort it out.
Yeah. Well, the part where Steven says in Robin Williams' Good Will Hunting style, this was not your fault. You were a child.
Right, exactly.
That's probably, he got that from his father, right? Like,
right. That's what I'm saying.
And that
was
a beautiful moment, I thought.
Yep. Yep. But the father doesn't bear, you know, the father still bears contributing, you know, responsibility. I'm just saying it's not an either or.
Right. He should have probably taken him out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, or at least stepped in.
Or, you know, kicked her out.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, he should have divorced her and kicked her out. So, you know, that's unacceptable.
Yeah. Oh, this is really getting to me because, I hope this isn't TMI. I've talked about it before, but I had an abusive parent and my mother took too long to get rid of him, but she did eventually.
Right.
Kicked him out, kicked his ass out.
Good for her. Good for her.
All right. So
I have notes. I have some other notes. I don't know if you were done with that point or.
Yeah, I'm done.
You were
your
going
turn.
Over there. Okay. Coming back again to the field of reeds, which also sounds to me, I can't say that without thinking of, what's it called in Fantastic Four, the Council of Reeds.
Oh,
there's a council of reeds with all these multiverse reeds that sit on a council. And
it's like a whole field of reeds.
And then that's right. But anyway, So he's in heaven, right? So now he's going to have to choose to leave heaven so that he can go, you know, help Layla and stop Haro. And it's just such a classic comic book trope, you know what I mean? And I dig it. You know, it's like, I think season 6 Buffy, you know what I mean? When she goes to heaven and they yank her out. I mean, it's not her choice, but she deals with it, you know? So just this idea that sometimes you get what you want, but then you have to give it up. in order to do the right thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and make a sacrifice. I mean,
right,
not only does he not get to stay in paradise, but he has to go back to the hell of being bound, bound with Khonshu.
Right. But he goes back stronger because now he's not as, he won't be able to be as manipulated by Khonshu, and he'll be more, he'll be able to utilize his duality to his benefit as opposed to being kind of in the way. So it's cool.
It'll be interesting to see if, the dynamic changes between the two of them now.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to talk a little, we've kind of covered it, so I'll try to go quickly, but just becoming Moon Knight is a big deal to see his origin. We found out Mark went to the military but got discharged for going into a fugue state, which
is... What is that?
I read about it. It's a psychiatric abnormality characterized by reversible amnesia for one's own personal identity, including memories, personality, and other identifying characteristics of individuality.
In other words, Jake came out.
It could be, yes, that the military just characterized Mark switching to another alter as that. Or sometimes it's a little different, but it still can be associated with dissociative identity disorder. Either way, you know, his he got kicked from the military, became a mercenary for his old commanding officer, Bushman, which is that supposed to be the same guy we saw in episode 3? I kind of don't think so.
Well, what I'm confused about is that if you go and I guess it's IMDb, so you know that's not always accurate.
Right.
But they had the guy in episode 3 listed as playing Bushman.
But we didn't see him though, did we? Or did we? I missed it.
See him where?
In this episode.
No, not at all.
Yeah, but last time,
we do see. Did we see him in the asylum last episode?
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Anyway,
I thought he might have been the guy handing out the cupcakes.
Okay.
I'm not positive.
I'm a little confused because.
But I think it's misdirect.
Okay.
Know? I think it's possible that Jake is Bushman.
Right. So they're supposed to raid this Egyptian tomb, the mercenaries. Bushman changed the plan and called for no witnesses, which I guess that means the archaeologists were all there. And Bushman said, "Let's kill them."
Well, he said he got greedy.
Yeah.
So maybe he wanted to take all of whatever was their finding.
But it seems like if they were, they didn't want witnesses either. So either way, Mark went there not knowing that they were going to have to kill everyone. And then that's what this CO told him. But you just see as Mark and Steven, who are watching their memories, they see a lot of dead bodies, including Layla's father. Right. Mark says he tried to get them all away, but we didn't make it. And then we see a bloodied Mark limping over to Khonshu's shrine or whatever. So we don't really know what the hell happened. I'm like, was that because it was too dark for Disney Plus, or was it because it had to do with this third personality and they're not ready to reveal that yet? And they're going to do it in the 30-minute episode next week.
Yeah, that'd be my guess. It's going to be real quick.
So we'll
Here's
see.
Jake, bang, bang. Tune in next week.
But, you know, one thing that makes me think it was either Mark or one of his alters that killed everyone is because in episode 1, or when one of the early episodes, Harrow followers that were disguised as police said that Mark killed a bunch of people. And I think Harrow saw into Mark's past when he weighed Steven's soul. So I think that means that he did do it.
I think we're definitely being led that way. And I think it would be a really interesting twist, you know, because it also sets up this, this wall between him and Layla. I mean, how could he ever be with her? How could she ever be with him? You know, if that's actually the case.
Right.
You
know? Yeah. And then we get the most comic booky moment probably of the whole series where Khonshu appears or, you know, is present and says, "In exchange for your life, do you swear to protect the travelers of the night and bring my vengeance to those who would do them harm?" And, then what does he say?
And be my Moon Knight.
Rise and live again as my fist of vengeance, as my Moon Knight. Which was awesome. And then his whole costume.
Okay, I want to be part of your cult now.
I loved it. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I thought so too. And again, like you said, very classic comic.
Yeah.
Comic book, yeah.
Very cool. Okay, You got. I actually have one more main point, but
okay, go ahead.
Okay,
just have little bullet points.
I was a little confused about. I loved Ethan Hawke as the Doctor. I mean, he's different than Harrow. He's playing a doctor, and he's great. It's awesome. I should mention, we haven't really mentioned, but I've liked him ever since he starred in Explorers when he was a kid with River Phoenix.
Yeah,
and Dead Poets Society, Alive, Reality Bites. These are some of my favorites. The whole Before trilogy with Julie Delpy or whatever her name is. Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before Midnight, Waking Life, Boyhood. Did you see that?
I did not, but I hear it's unbelievable.
It filmed over 12 years.
I know, it's amazing.
And he's going to be in Knives Out 2 coming out this year. But okay, you explain.
Yeah, I think he's underrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
So you I wasn't clear, cuz it's kind of weird that there's scenes where they're kind of in an asylum, but they could look through the windows and see their memories, and it's more fantastical. But then they flash over to scenes where he's talking to Dr. Harrow.
Right.
And but it's still the same kind of environment. But you're saying that's like the three levels of the psyche.
Right. Right.
But is it still also the underworld? It's like a combination of his psyche and the underworld mixing together or something.
Well, it's more that the underworld is allowing him to see things. He's in the underworld because he just got shot and he's dying.
Yeah.
Or he's dead. But so in this in between place, they're using things from within his own mind or his own life experience to show these different levels of development.
Okay.
And when you get to the top, you're basically self-actualizing and coming to terms with everything, and therefore you can kind of see where it is. So it no longer needs to look like the
asylum. Like coming out of the Matrix a little bit.
Exactly. When he opens up that door, and it made that a very dramatic image too.
Right. You know? Contrast. Yeah. But I didn't notice, well, I think I saw it from Ryan Airy, but that his diploma isn't signed, which is a sign. Because the other possibility is that the only thing that is real is the asylum and he's just crazy. Which of course is not what's going
on. Right.
Okay, let's move on to notes.
No, I thought it was I agree with you on the doctor, because, and I think it's because, you know, we've already been conditioned that this character is a villain.
Yeah.
And so, but what's happening is Mark's mind is grabbing things from his life and using them to represent other things. Mm-hmm. And so the doctor, he grabs Harrow, but so we immediately, when we first meet the doctor, we're like, oh, we don't trust him. This is a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
all the patients were also people from his life too. So it's just the same kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. We've hit on most of my points. The only other one I wanted to point out was I thought it was really cool, the foreshadowing with Stephen reaching. So when he turns to stone, he's in exactly the same pose as the gold living statue Crawley guy from episode one and episode
another
two.
Another foreshadowing thing.
Yeah. And then also I saw someone on Instagram posted up the pictures comparing each other. When he's Mr. Knight with Khonshu reaching up to the skies to try and spin the stars, there's a shot where it's almost exactly the same pose again, where it's just the one arm reaching up and the camera's up above looking, you know, looking up. So it was just a lot of foreshadowing there.
Echoing
echoing. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Because I remember I was seeing when I saw the living statue, I was like, what a weird pose for the living statue to do. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird.
I liked when they were looking through the memories and they saw that moment too of turning back the night sky.
Yeah.
And they see Moon Knight beating up that jackal monster from episode one too.
Right. Well, also I thought was cool too, here's an interesting thing. What Mark says to him, though, they look at the window of the world, the star spinning with Khonshu and Mr. Knight doing, and Layla's there and they're on the sand and the stars are spinning. Stephen walks away after looking at it for a minute and Mark stays and he says, wow, that's cool. Which is interesting because why is Mark not aware of that? He didn't see that.
Wait, which thing? The sky?
Yeah.
Because it was Steven in control.
No, I know it was Steven, but yeah. Does that mean Mark was completely not there? Because usually they kind of are when they're right. In those scenarios where they're bopping back and forth and fighting and not fighting and talking to each other and everything else, they seem to be completely aware of what's going on.
I don't know if that's constant, though.
Maybe that was Jake. And Jake didn't see it. So he was like, wow, that's freaking Whoa. Cool. I don't know. Anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe not.
I mean, I'm not going to say no to any of that. I hope.
I think the bottom line is that we have to get, because I could hear you just about to say, I hope we get answers. Don't set your hopes too high. We're going to get answers, but we're going to be left with a lot of questions, I think.
I mean,
that's my guess.
Sarcophagus makes me really want some clarity. If it wasn't for that, then I could just be like, okay, they were hinting at it the whole time, but maybe there's nothing there. But with the sarcophagus, it's such a strong, like, he has a third personality.
Right. You know? Well, I think if it all comes to pass that it was Jake that is the Bushman or was responsible for killing all those people, then, and that's the big twist at the end, then even if they don't say the sarcophagus was that, it kind of is self-evident.
Absolutely.
It's kind of self-evident.
No,
you know
absolutely.
I mean?
I'm just saying if they don't address it at all, then the presence of the sarcophagus makes me feel really frustrated that they would put that in there and then not address it.
It'll be interesting to, they've also in that damn it, finale, they got to have some sort of a big confrontation between Amat and Moon Knight. You know what I mean? And it's like, plus then like
30 seconds of that.
Yeah, I know. Right. I get, plus it'll probably, I wonder if we'll get to see some of the gods too, or they'll just be in their host forms, but they're going to have to come back.
That'd be cool.
Cause they're going to have to come to terms with the fact that they were wrong and that, you know, Hera was lying to them and that, you know, Khonshu was actually trying to do the right thing and trying to protect everything. And, you know, they're going to have to, maybe they'll voluntarily, absolve him of whatever, you know, crimes he did.
Yeah.
To get put
Good
in stone.
Point.
Who knows?
It's a lot to pack in.
Yeah, it is.
Any other notes?
No. No, that's it.
Okay. I just have a few, couple funny lines. I liked when Mark pulled, after Tawarit gave her explanation of weighing the souls and everything, Mark pulls Steven aside and is just like, if we need to, we just kill the hippo and take this boat.
Actually, yeah, he says, and then later he says, you know what Layla would be all right with? I'm just saying, there's only one hippo and two of us. you know, Layla would be cool with it. You know what I mean? It's like
Dude, that's a god.
Yeah, that was great.
And then when Tawarit was first exposed to them and she's like, are you like twins? And Mark says no. And Steve
says
goes,
yes.
Yeah, sort of. And then she goes, thanks. That's really cleared up this situation for me. And I thought, kind of sarcastically, right? And I thought it was funny that a talking hippo is saying, you've really cleared things up for me.
It's cool. Well, I think it's also, that's a little bit of an indication because that was early on. That was when they first meet her.
Yeah, first meet her.
And Steven still hasn't learned the truth. Mm-hmm. So in his mind, he's kind of like, yeah, we're kind of like twins.
We're like twins.
You know what I mean? Because he's thinking of himself as being separate.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And by the end, he realizes he's not separate.
He's not. Yeah.
No,
that
he's
was
part.
His kind of arc for the episode.
Yeah.
And I liked when Steven said Harrow was very Ned Flanders.
That was funny. That was funny.
And not no more funny stuff, but when Steven told Mark, you know, if we don't go back and then Layla's dies, it'll be all your fault. It's like, oh, that's such a trigger for him.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, come on. You talk about manipulating yourself. Yeah. I'm going to manipulate myself.
Wow.
Wow.
But this was a crazy episode, man.
It was. It was nuts. It was nuts.
Pretty cool. All right. We will take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. Out there without care, yeah, I was out of touch, but it wasn't because I didn't know enough.
just knew too much. Does that make me crazy?
Okay, we're back. It's time for some news. Businessinsider.com says Moon Knight has been the most in-demand series globally across all platforms every day for the last 2 weeks. It's been 86.5 times more in demand than the average show since it debuted in March.
Than the average Disney Plus show or just average streaming?
I don't know. Just as average show across all platforms. So I think that means every show.
Wow. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, people are into it, I guess.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. It seems like, you know, the Disney Plus shows just keep being more and more successful, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. They're killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. And even the Star Wars, I guess Boba Fett was a little disappointing, but still pretty good.
Yeah, I found it disappointing. I mean, the two best episodes were the ones that had Mandalorian. Mando. Yeah, exactly. I mean, right. There was some good stuff in there,
but yeah, I agree.
It was a wicked missed opportunity, you know?
Voice actress for Towerette is Antonia Salib. This is her first acting role, at least per IMDb. She talked a little bit about the audition process in an interview with Marvel. She said, they kind of gave me a fake name and they had a dummy script. It was only once I was about to meet the director and the casting team, they just mentioned, by the way, you're going to be a CGI hippo. And I was like, okay, sounds great.
That must have been disheartening. That must have been so freaking bummer. Can you imagine? I'm going to be in a Disney Plus show. Right. Oh, my God. A Marvel Universe. Oh, my God. Yeah, you're CGI hippo.
I think she was, because it's her first thing. But, yeah, you don't find that out until the end. But she played the character, too, with mocap. And she says, I wore these huge platform shoes. They were supposed to be hippo feet. There was this, and she got a whole costume, a scarab, hieroglyphs, and everything. And she seemed to have a good time with it.
That's cool.
Entertainment Weekly talked with director Mohamed Diab about the final. Well, there's a whole thing about this episode, but I thought I would just read what he said about next week's episode. He says, I hope it's a satisfying wrap up to our story. I feel it is. There are some surprises. I think the audience deserves a big action sequence, but it's more than that. It has some twists and turns, and I really feel like it's a satisfying ending to our journey.
All right. Well, so maybe rather than 30 seconds of Moon Knight, we might get 45 or 60 seconds.
Right. Maybe up to 2 minutes, like double you think the appearance.
Wow, 120 time. Seconds? I don't know. That might be pushing it.
Asking for too much. I'm excited.
Set those bars lower. Set them lower. Set those bars lower.
That is key to, like, a lot of times if my expectations are low, I'll like something a lot more.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. That's it for the news. Let's get in some feedback.
All right. Ben Stone, great, intense episode. I think we're in agreement on that.
Yeah. Bianx Vargas says, wow, I need to watch that again.
Daphne Backman, I think my TV shows are trying to break me this week. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it was pretty sad, like we said.
Yeah, it was. It was very sad.
Cat Craft says, God, I mean, Towerette, I love this show.
Yeah, excellent. Shay Weed, intense episode, lots of emotion, packed into just over 40 minutes. Oscar Isaac knocked it out of the park. I wonder how he was able to act with himself. I'm hoping that Moon Knight becomes a staple of the Marvel Universe and we see him on the big screen. I do too, but I'm pretty confident that he will.
I hope soon, yeah.
It may not be too soon, but I suspect the next time we see him, it will be, he might have a cameo, but I think it's going to be the Midnight Suns is what it's called. They seem to be gearing up towards that. They're starting to introduce,
characters.
Now, wasn't there, characters that like Blade and the Black Knight and stuff like that. Wasn't there also rumor that Man-Wolf was going to be in the finale or in this?
Yeah, Werewolf by Night.
Werewolf by Night. Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't seen that. Maybe that was false.
Yeah, could be.
Maybe the first 20 minutes will be Werewolf by Night next week.
No, we're going to get 5 seconds. 5 seconds of Werewolf by Night.
Right, that'll be awesome.
I hope we get Mr. Knight as well as Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Because I like that guy. I like that costume.
I'm not convinced for sure that I wouldn't say that it's 100% that Steven's coming back, but I hope so.
OK, God damn you.
I just don't know. Shay said, I wonder how he was able to act with himself. We found out last week or the week before that his brother, Oscar Isaac's brother, was a stand-in.
Oh,
and so he acted cool with his brother, and then they just, like, I guess, digitally imposed Oscar Isaac's face.
Right, right. He's just doing an amazing job.
Heck yeah. Emily Rouse as well. I enjoyed the episode, and it definitely gave us character development. I was disappointed there was little plot development. I'm left with a lot of questions. Does Mark have a third alter? If he does, wouldn't this have been the proper episode to address it? Yes, I say yes. Was it misdirection when
I say it was?
Maybe they did.
When it was addressed.
Was it misdirection when the security guard in the first episode called him Scotty? What's in the red sarcophagus? Is this the end of Steven and only one episode left?
Mea Favo says, wow, so much happening in this episode. Looking forward to you making sense of it. Well, I wouldn't. That's a high expectation right there.
Yeah,
that's right. Let's lower that expectation right now.
Ratchet that down.
That's right. Looking forward to you making sense of it. Will we see Steven again? I think so. Did you think opening altar sarcophagus would be wait? I read this before we started, and I had no problem with it. I get stage fright, I guess. Did you think opening the altar in the sarcophagus would be a way to fill the heart?
Yes, I did.
Yes, rather than Steven falling off the boat.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think so. But I think the finale will you'll understand why we didn't. Yeah. Really confused on whether Dr. Harrow was real or not. Well, I think it was Steven's mind, just using him as a
way to work it all out.
Moniker, kind of thing. Yeah. And whether anything he said had agency or just representation of Mark. Will we see Moon Knight in the finale? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did we meet the third altar with that New York City accent? Absolutely.
No.
Don't listen to him, guys.
I don't know. You know, the secret to this podcast is it's actually only one person doing it.
Am I the Steven or am I the Mark or am
I
the Jake?
Never, just don't worry about it.
All right. Oh my God. R.I.P. Steven.
Bob Oak says, so this episode was all about learning the history of Mark, Mark's awful relationship with his mother, and why Mark created Steven. So Steven's whole existence has been about protecting Mark. He was literally created to protect Mark. And in this episode, Steven, quote unquote, dies as the result of protecting Mark. After this episode, I've decided that Steven is the real hero of the series.
Ah.
He is one. He is a hero, at least.
Yep, yep. Laura Willie Swink. Oh my goodness, Tabaret. That was a tour de force by Oscar Isaac. He had me laughing, my heart breaking, and eventually completely in tears. Tourette was fun, and the duet were creepy as hell. But nothing compares to Isaac's performance in this episode. Yeah, I agree. He's just killing it. At the end of the journey, after Steven falls into the sands, Tourette tells Mark his scales are balanced. This makes me believe that we've not lost Steven. I agree. I'm no psychologist, but I believe one treatment for DID is to try to combine the personalities into one. Is it possible that Mark and Steven could have now been absorbed into one personality? That still leaves us with the question of the third identity, though. That's an interesting idea.
Integration. I mean, I kind of felt like they were hinting at that when Steven on the boat said, if you can handle this, then so can I. And then he suddenly was a better fighter, you know?
Right. In other words, I can access the same skills now. I hope they don't do that, because I think what makes him unique in the comic as well as in this show is the dual personalities.
That's a good point. Yeah.
You know, and I think it would be a mistake if that went away.
They got rid of it, like the Professor Hulk.
Yeah, exactly.
Dabalino Bob Grippy says, I honestly thought the hippo was a hallucination, perhaps some woman he actually knew, but just distorted by his trip. Probably the most satisfying episode. I must have said, wow, a couple dozen times. Love the Ned Flanders remark also. Yeah. Purple burglar alarm. That's a joke from another podcast.
Okay. You know what would be trippy and would be funny is if the actress that plays the hippo has some sort of human role in the finale, you know, like in a restaurant or as a waitress or something. You know what I mean?
Starbucks. Well,
just starts. Yeah, exactly. Hey, hi. I don't see you here.
That'd be cool. Then at least the actress would get to be on screen.
Yeah, there you go. Danielle de Montjost. I find that understanding DID a little helps me appreciate this show more than I think I would otherwise. I agree. I recommend anyone interested to spend a little time learning about it. I'm far from an expert, but I became interested in it a few months ago and went down a rabbit hole of YouTubers and research articles about it. YouTube is a rabbit hole you got to be careful about.
Yeah, but there's some great stuff on there. That's the thing.
Oh, there is. Yeah. It's tremendous. As heartbreaking as it was, I was glad to see them address Mark's childhood trauma. DID is a protective device used by a child's mind to protect the child, and I've been wondering what the catalyst was. I always assumed Mark was the protector, the trauma holder, but it looks like Stephen was the protector all along. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
It really is fascinating. I wonder if we will ever have a clear answer about what is real in the world and what is real in his mind. Do we know if there's another season coming? I'd love to hear Lucy's take on this show if she's up for it. I don't know if there's going to be another season. I haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah.
I have heard stuff about him moving into the films.
Yeah.
Not.
They haven't said definitively, as far as I know. They've hinted that there won't be, but also the director, Mohamed Diab, said if there is, he'd love to actually film in Egypt because of, I guess, political tensions. They haven't been able to film in Egypt. So he's open to it, but I feel like they've suggested there won't be. So we really don't know.
Yeah.
It's Oscar Isaac, so I would imagine he'd want to just be in the movies, but who knows? Alma Contreras says, I knew it. The asylum is a form of purgatory. The scene where Mark opened the door under the ship was dope. And how awesome was the hippo goddess? I loved her voice. I've been wondering who the principal personality was. Poor Mark. So Mark has always known about Stephen, but Stephen never knew about Mark until they had to face the mother's death. It does seem that way.
Yeah, I think so.
And how about the other personalities, assuming there are more? That scene with Kanju was cool, too. I've missed that pigeon, LOL. I'm so loving this
series. I do.
I know, yeah. It challenges me to research stuff like Egyptian mythology and aspects such as the whereabouts of Alexander the Great's tomb. I wasn't aware it remains a mystery. Can't wait to listen to you guys break this episode down. That was great, Alma. Thank you.
I mentioned last week, right, about the possibility that tomb is going to be Ramatut and that Alexander the Great will have been Kang.
You did, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Could be cool. Okay, we got a couple of calls. Here's Greg.
Oh, man. So, Moon Knight, Episode 5, Asylum. This is Greg. What an emotional roller coaster. This is just like these scenes with his mom were just so tough to watch. I had a really hard time just watching him go through that. I mean, to be tortured, not intentionally necessarily, but to be tortured to the point where you have to invent a different personality so that they could just be okay and have like take all of the good in you and shunt it to the side to protect it. God damn, that's fucking dark. Anyway, it was really tough to watch. I'll probably watch it again, but man, it was hard. I didn't notice any of the like Easter eggs or anything like that because I was so emotionally invested in the episode. Anyway, I look forward to hearing you guys talk about it. I thought this was probably my favorite so far, even though it was all just taking place in his head, and the switching back and forth between quote unquote real in the doctor's office and not real in the asylum, but he's dead, but he's real. Not, I don't know. I really don't know what the fuck is going on. All right. Bye.
That's what I love about this show that's similar to Legion is sometimes you feel crazy while you're watching it.
Yeah, exactly. You're in the car on the roller coaster.
Yeah, exactly. Great call, Greg. And one more from Steve Brown.
Hey, Jason and Kirk, this is Steve, and this is for Moon Knight. Just a general voicemail. I love you guys' coverage of this. Kirk, you and Jason both bring things to it that I don't think about, and I love hearing your breakdowns of the episode, and I enjoy, really, this whole series has been just great. I love hearing y'all's theories and seeing some of them kind of pan out and seeing where they're going to go, especially the one from the last podcast of who punched Steven, was it Mark, or was it a third identity? And I don't know. I have to say, I think it has to be Mark that punched him, because coming right after the kiss, you know, why would, if there's a third identity, unless that third identity is also in love with Layla. I don't know. But anyway, I love listening to you guys, and I love hearing everything that everybody has to say about this show, and cannot wait for the final episode. All right. Talk to you later.
Oh, thanks, Steve. That's awesome. Thought that was going to be Steve. A live Steve, but that was even better.
That was awesome.
Yeah, we've been awesome. Getting some pretty good compliments online, people digging nice. The coverage. So thank you guys. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. And thanks, everybody, too. I got so much reaction and positive support to my piece that I put up on the first episode. And I just thank everybody for all their comments and reaction to that. I appreciate that.
When's episode 2 coming?
It's in the works.
Yay! All right, that is our show. Thanks so much for listening, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
One more to go.
One more to go.
If you want to write in for that one or leave us a message, you can find all our contact, as usual, at podcastica.com.
While you're there, be sure to check out our other shows.
Yeah, Rima and Wendy and Paik are starting to cover the final part of Ozark over on Strange Indeed right now. And that I watched the first, that just came on yesterday. It's so good.
Yeah, I haven't, that's one on my list to do.
It's good. And then we're doing Better Call Saul on House Podcastica too. That's been fantastic so far. And I guess that's it. Oh yeah, and we're wrapping up our Yellow Jackets rewatch. So a bunch of great shows.
Wow. Excellent.
All right. That is it. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks everybody. Nope. Thank you.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.